Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Couple Speak Relationship Forum on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Susan Lager, a psychotherapist and relationship coach at the Couples Center and Couple Speak in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, where I broadcast live alternate Wednesdays at 8:30 p.m. Tonight's 45-minute show is called What's Your Conflict Style? I'll be co-hosting with Meredith Richardson, someone very familiar with conflict. She's a collaborative lawyer and conflict coach at her private practice, Resolution, in Elliott, Maine. And together we'll be discussing various conflict styles, how you may have developed your own, and looking at how well it serves you. We'll include a self-test you can take to find out more about your own style if you're interested. And if you have any questions or comments, just dial 1 on your phone and you'll be brought on the air when we have the space. Hi, Meredith.
Hey, Susan. Thank you so much for having me join you. This is a fun one for me. I spend a lot of my life dealing with conflict, not necessarily my conflict, but other people's conflict.
That's right. This is your world, so we're talking about your world. Anyway, I thought maybe we should start with a definition of conflict so people know what we're talking about here, because people might have assumptions about how they view it or what they think it is.
Okay.
Sound good?
Sounds good.
I looked it up in Wikipedia or Webster's Dictionary, and the first thing that came up was a fight, a battle, or a war. Okay? And it's defined as competitive or opposing action of incompatibles. Hold on one second. My husband tuned in and he cannot hear. So let me give you another number to call in and see if you get it. Tom, let me give you another number, okay?
Yeah.
Try calling in on, we have problems, folks, with the 877 number. So if it's dead air, it doesn't bode well for this show. 760-542-4114. 760-542-4114. So try that and see if you get anything, okay? I'm having him do this just to see if he, as another listener, can hear. And it looks like the show is going because the streaming button is on. Folks, by the way, talk about conflict. This creates a lot of experience of conflict for me, conflict with Blog Talk Radio and what the heck is going on. Anyway, it's also, and Meredith, feel free to share what you would define as conflict. By the way, he says he got in and he can hear the show, which is good. So there's something wrong with the 877 number. I'm going to have major conflict with Blog Talk Radio.
So let me take a step back in terms of conflict, although we definitely could talk about this, but I think that goes back to our prior show on anger. For me, conflict is whenever one person's, there's the potential anyway for conflict, whenever one person's needs and expectations bump up against another person's needs and expectations.
Yeah.
So for me, conflict, as Wikipedia defined it, I think is part of what makes conflict so scary in our society, because it's talking about conflict as war. And really, it's just that, it's that bump, it's that little friction, right, where the differing needs and expectations meet. And I think that how you handle that is how you manage the conflict. And so the conflict can turn big and ugly. It can turn into conflict with a capital C. It can turn into war. But it also can be something that people can maneuver through and quite successfully with minimal damage or impact.
Yeah, so a lot of it is the kind of cultural bias that we get in this culture anyway, where it's seen as something bad, something nasty. You know, they have another definition of competitive or opposing action of incompatibles, antagonistic state or action, mental struggle resulting from incompatible or opposing needs. It's really about difference. And the point you're making is that it's all about how you manage the differences and how you get to some kind of resolution around those differences, whether in fact they are incompatible and whatever adjustments you make.
Exactly.
Would you say?
That's exactly what I would say. I do think it's a negative bias in our society because it brings up uncomfortable feelings. There is that piece of it. So when you do have it and you do have that friction, it can be very uncomfortable. But if you can move through it and you can move through it respectfully and collaborate, then you could end up with a win-win situation. It doesn't have to be a win-lose situation, but that doesn't mean there wasn't conflict before you got to win-win.
That's right. That's right. So it's all how you approach it, and that's really what this program is going to be about. We're going to talk about different conflict styles and how, you know, one style may serve you in one arena and another style may serve you in another arena, and how the outcome is very much colored by your approach, your style, and your approach in any given situation. Now, Meredith, when I was doing research about conflict, I came across, and I don't know if you feel that this might be useful for us to get into, or if we're going to have a fight about it. I don't know. We could fight about this one.
I'm afraid of you, Susan. I'm not fighting with you.
I think you're formidable. Yeah, I wouldn't want to have major conflict with you because you are a formidable force. But you know what? We've never really, actually, we encounter conflict with some frequency, and we handle it really well, and we can go into that. So that two very strong-willed titans somehow manage to work together and play together and not kill each other. Right?
It's true. True.
Yeah.
I think we have a good respect for each other and, and there's fair fighting and there's unfair fighting, right? There's healthy boundaries and unhealthy boundaries.
That's right.
Think that we do look at each other in the whole picture and see the positive.
Yes.
And hold that positive light.
I think we do.
Beverly D'Onofrio, in her book, I think it's called Searching for Mary, she has a quote that I love about conflict. She says that all conflict begins at the same point when I am blind to what I have and see only what I don't.
Ooh, I like that.
And I think that that's a nice way to look at it because it is when you're not feeling grateful. If you have that moment of conflict, that is not a gratitude moment.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can take a step back and think about the other things, right, the things that you do have as opposed to seeing only what you don't.
Right.
It may just...
But it's also, that quote speaks to a kind of scarcity mentality, that there's somehow not enough resources or enough to go around so that we can each get what we want. Somehow it's got to be win-lose. And,
exactly.
They talk about that when they talk about how conflict can come from a variety of sources. One would be that scarce resources, like conflict can happen when you're competing over a scarce resource. So if there's just one piece of bread and you're both starving, you've got an issue that you have to resolve. It can come from...
And you're right, though, when you said it's not necessarily whether the resources are scarce, it's whether you view the resources as being scarce. So,
right.
You know, I see people in conflict over their children and trying to do a parenting plan, and some people get very caught up in the amount of hours and seconds, making sure that they have absolutely equal time with the other parent. And I have seen people literally counting hours to make sure they have the same hours. Well, that is not about the actual hours that are spent with the child. That is about that scarcity mentality, that feeling that if I don't have, if it's not exactly equal, then I will be less than.
Yeah, or I'm not going to get what I want, or if you get what you want, I can't get what I want. It's a kind of win-lose sort of mentality.
Right.
And I see that with land and countries and acquisitions, people feeling like, you know, I've got to have more, and if I have more, you have to have less. There isn't enough somehow for us to go around. But
and power and money, and there's a lot, right?
Now, they talk about how conflict also comes from, it can happen as a result of conflicting goals or priorities. It can happen when there's a lack of shared goals. I see that, and I'm sure you see that a lot with your clients, that are we on the same page in terms of desired outcomes? So that raises a lot of, that can raise real friction and get people's short hairs up. Personality conflicts. They're a common cause of conflict, and sometimes there's no chemistry or you just haven't figured out an effective way to click with somebody. I have sessions all the time where, and you probably see this a lot in your work, where people talk about how we just rub each other the wrong way, the way my partner does something or the way my partner manages a situation is so different. Their personality and their whole kind of approach to something is so different than mine would be, I just can't abide it. I'm sure you see that as a mediator.
I do. I would say two things with respect to personality conflicts. I think when I think of personality conflicts, I don't start off thinking about what I see in the room with couples or former couples. I start off thinking about people in general who rub me the wrong way. And they're not people that I would have ever chosen to be in a relationship with. There's something that annoys me just from the get-go. And
right.
That doesn't make me sound like a very good professional at all. But that's the truth of it. Some people do just rub us the wrong way. They're not, they don't speak to us. And it can be helpful to try to find those qualities in them that do speak to us so that we can be kinder, at least in our minds, toward them. And then
that's about styles and how people have very different styles, and your thinking style or your communication style might really conflict with somebody else's thinking or their communication style, and it feels like it rubs you the wrong way, that we just are stylistically so different. But the good news is that conflicts and styles are easy to adapt to, you know, if you know how. And I think, speaking to your point, if you can shift your focus, you shift your focus to common ground and what is there about the other person that you do jive with. But
right.
That style thing, like, accounts for a lot of people feeling rubbed the wrong way by other people. One of the big ones I see, Meredith, my work, that feels really incompatible to people and unresolvable is conflicts in values, where the challenge here is that values are core. And adapting, you know, you can adapt with styles, that's one thing, but dealing with conflicting values is really another thing. And that's why a particular business, a group, or a culture may not be a good fit for you because the core values don't jive with yours. And it's also why they say birds of a feather flock together and why opposites attract but similarities bind. You know, people need to feel that they're on the same page in terms of core values, what's really important to them in life with the people around them. So that can be a real, you know, I see that when people move toward divorce.
Well, and that's what I was going to say, was the second part where you were talking about it with people who divorce. I think that the first stage of their relationship is not this behavior really annoys me, right? The first stage of their relationship is, oh, this is a nice complimentary behavior. I'm not really good at whatever it is. Or I think it's cute that this person does this. I find this endearing. And it is the whole opposites attracting. And then it's recognizing, oh, this behavior is going to continue. This is never going to change. And then the frustration builds. And you lose that. It's losing sight of the part that you once saw as being so great. It's either no longer having appreciation for that, no longer seeing it as cute, or that you used to see that other parts of that person, you know, the better part, you saw that as better, they outweighed this piece, and this piece has gradually grown to outweigh.
That's partly about chemicals in your brain and how, you know, all the bonding chemicals, the serotonin, the dopamine, and all the good-feeling chemicals that ramped up the feeling of union and oneness, those ebb away with time, and then you're back to, oh, we are really different creatures, and I'm not sure I can live with this long-term. So, I think that's what inevitably with more disappointments and more time, there is naturally more of an increased experience of difference in relationship. And then it's how you handle it. It's how you manage it.
Exactly.
Now, Meredith, we got a little bit of a late start, but I thought it might be a good idea for us to take a little commercial break for a minute here, just to share with our listeners about the upcoming retreat, and then we'll get back to our regular programming. What do you think?
That sounds good.
Okay.
Do you want to start? Do you want me to start?
I can start, and you can continue.
Okay.
All our listeners who haven't already heard about it, Meredith and I are doing a couples retreat from June 21st to June 25th on beautiful, magical Star Island off the coast of New Hampshire and Maine. It's the Isle of Shoals. And the retreat is for committed couples who want to improve their communication, deepen their connection, and to reduce conflict or to manage conflict more effectively. So Meredith is going to be there the whole 5 days. I'll be there the first 3 days. We're also going to have Heather Brontes, who's a financial planner, talking about money and issues around money that couples face, either well or not so well. And it should be an amazing experience. I think so, don't you?
I'm really looking forward to it. We've had a lot of fun putting it together, and I think people are going to have a lot of fun doing the workshops with us.
Yeah, I think it'll be a gas. Now, anybody interested, just go to starisland.org to register, or if you'd like more information about it, you can email Meredith at meredithmediates@aol.com or email me, Couples Center, couplescctr @gmail.com. And we'd be happy to give you more information. And the other thing I thought I should mention is that for anybody interested in how to manage conflict differently, Meredith is a conflict coach. Take it away, Meredith. Tell them what you do a little bit.
So the easy answer is I help people with a really big out loud voice to say a little less, and I help people with a really tiny out loud voice to say a little more. So,
That's a great way of putting it. Okay. So how you can be more appropriately assertive.
Yes.
Right?
On both ends of it. So, you know, for some people it's really difficult to speak up and assert their needs, and other people are really, really good at it, and they can stomp all over everybody's toes. So,
right.
It's a balance.
So you do that with individuals, and you also do mediation with couples, and you're a collaborative lawyer, so this is your world, conflict.
Conflict is my world, thankfully.
It sure is your world. And I also work with people individually and in couples around conflict. It comes up. It's a central issue with major frequency in my work. So if you're interested in working with me around it, it's one of the things I do. I'd be happy to work with you around it. Now, I thought, Meredith, if we could go into some of the conflict styles and the instruments that we know about and that I played with one of them. I had a really good time, found out a little bit about my own style. But why don't we talk a little bit about the Thomas Kilman conflict mode instrument, okay?
Okay.
You're familiar with that also. This is probably the world's best-selling tool for helping people understand how different conflict handling styles affect interpersonal and group dynamics, and for empowering them to choose an appropriate style for any situation. That's what I like about it. It assesses an individual's typical behavior in conflict situations and describes it along two dimensions, assertiveness and cooperativeness, going from low to high. So why don't we just get into talking about the five different conflict management styles, okay?
Okay.
Now, on the high end of cooperation would be accommodating, okay? It's on the high end of cooperation, but on the low end of assertiveness. And this is when you compete to a high degree, and it may be at your own expense. When you cooperate, I'm sorry, to a high degree, but it may be at your own expense and actually work against your own goals, objectives, and desired outcomes. You kind of yield. This approach is effective when the other party is the expert or has a better solution. It can also be effective for preserving future relations with the other party, accommodating. That's kind of just yielding. Would you want to say anything else about that? That one?
I mean, I would say that accommodating is the one where you're better at taking care of other people than at taking care of yourself a lot of times. And it can be more of a stereotypically female role. It can be something that women are taught to do from a young age.
Yes. I got a very low score on the accommodating one.
I am not surprised.
More on that. But when I'm in the calm part, and we'll talk about that in a little bit, because there's another test that assesses calm and storm, which I like. But for our purposes right now, another conflict style is avoiding. This is when you simply avoid the issue, and you aren't helping the other partner reach their goals, and you aren't assertively pursuing your own. And it seems to work when the issue is either trivial, when you have no chance of winning. It can also be effective when the issue would be very costly. It's also effective when the atmosphere is emotionally charged and you need to create some space. Sometimes issues will resolve themselves, but in general, avoiding is not a good long-term strategy. And do you ever avoid? Yes, it does. Do you ever use avoid as a style?
I would like to say I think everybody avoids at some point. There are always things where it's just not worth it, but it's not my go-to style.
Yeah. What I've noticed about myself is that there are a few people where I may have a professional relationship with them. Not you, Meredith, but I've had a professional relationship with them, and I've just learned that can't go there. It's too costly. Engaging in some kind of trying to engage around the conflict is going to get nowhere, because I've just learned that there is no collaborating. There's no nothing that good that's going to come out of it. And so it we don't really deal with the issue, but it's sort of a costly way of preserving the relationship, and with the decision to preserve the relationship for other reasons. But you're right.
It is.
It's kind of at the cost of your own, ultimately at your own mental health, if you make avoiding your primary style.
Right. And I would say it depends on the relationship. It's what the value is to the relationship. You know, because it's one thing to have it be someone that you know professionally, or maybe a relative you don't have to see very often. And it's another thing to have it be the person that you live with, that you see on a daily basis.
Yeah.
That's a lot of stress.
I probably, if I were to divide it along gender lines, I see men, ironically enough, men who have been trained by the culture to be more assertive or more aggressive will often shut down, their wives will pursue them and men will shut down. They'll avoid, they just won't talk, they won't engage, or they'll compartmentalize and take it off the table. And it's not good in an ongoing situation. There's no real solution. You don't get to solutions. Now,
well, I would say I see it different ways in terms of men and women. I would agree with you. In terms of men sort of denning, I guess is the way I think of it. Like they go off and they are in their cave or whatever, but they, you know, get apart from the person.
Yeah.
To not have the conversation. And so stereotypically, again, talking big broad brushes, but I think you'll see it in, with a woman in an abusive relationship, she would avoid because it was not safe.
Yeah.
To have that discussion.
Right, yes.
So for women, it feels often more like a safety issue. But whereas for men, it's still a power thing. It's still, you know, I'm not willing to have this conversation.
Right. Well, they've even coined a phrase that men, that pertains to men and why, how it may at times drive male avoidance, male relational dread. Have you heard that one?
I have not, but I like that.
Isn't that great? Male relational dread. And so it may spur on a kind of avoidant style.
That might be a fear thing, though, because when you're talking about dread, it is that feeling of, oh, yuck, right?
Exactly.
It's not quite the same, oh, yuck, as I'm afraid, but it's,
right. This is going to be a big conversation. I don't want it. It's going to go on all night, stuff like that. And I don't like talking about stuff, and there's no way we can come to center around this, so avoidance. Third one is collaborating, okay? Now, collaborating in the Kilman assessment tool is very high on the assertiveness scale, and it's high on the cooperative end of the scale. It's probably one of the most, I would say, evolved conflict styles, and this is where you partner or pair up with the other partner to achieve both of your goals. You break free of win-lose, the win-lose paradigm, and you seek the win-win. And this can be really effective for complex scenarios when you need to find a novel situation. It can also mean reframing the challenge to create a bigger space and room for everybody's ideas. But the downside is that it requires a high degree of trust. And reaching a consensus can require a lot of time and effort to get everybody on board and to synthesize all the ideas. So it's not the most economical in terms of time, and it does require a lot of trust, collaboration, win-win.
Right. And it also requires a good amount of respect on both sides. So it's respecting the other person's opinion and truly being able to hear what that person has to say and valuing that.
I'm glad you said that. That's true. It's not only trust. It's like valuing the other person's concerns, giving them equal weight to your own concerns.
Right.
So you hold out for a win-win.
Right. I do a little work with something called CORE, and it separates people into four categories: commander, organizer, relator, and entertainer. And when we look at how they approach a group decision, commanders are the leaders. And so their approach, if they're tasked with making a group decision, what a commander does is the commander figures out how it needs to be done and then tries to convince everyone else to do it the way the commander wants.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a true collaboration.
Right.
Relators, on the other hand, they have a hard time advocating for their own needs, but they're very good at advocating for other people's needs. So when they are tasked with a group decision, they're going to want to make sure that everybody in the room is okay with what they come up with. So they are more likely to collaborate.
Yeah.
And then organizers like data and they like facts. And so they try to figure it out as well in terms of what would be the best decision. They take a lot more time to get a lot more information than leaders do. But then they're comfortable with just doing a vote and whoever wins, that's the decision that's made.
Okay, so the most amount of votes would get their way, but it's not really, it wouldn't move you toward a win-win.
No, there's definitely a lose at some point, but it, since it's a win for most.
Okay.
And then they see that as, well, that's what the data supports, right?
So okay.
So it's just different ways of looking at how people come to group consensus. Collaboration is hard because if
Extremely.
You're going to get everyone to be feeling that, you know, this is good enough.
Yeah. But, again, if you have a complex scenario and you need a novel solution and there's a high amount of trust and respect, collaboration is very high on the cooperation and assertiveness end of the scale. Now, moving on, Meredith, competing. This is another conflict style, and this is the classic win-lose approach. You act in a very assertive way to achieve your goals, I say very bossy, without seeking to cooperate with the other party, and it may be at the expense of the other party. This approach may be appropriate for emergencies when time is of the essence or, you know, when you need a quick, decisive action and people are aware of and support the approach. So there's no time for dilly-dallying. Somebody just takes over and they work to get their solution. And I'm sure when you are mediating, you see a lot of that.
There is a good percentage of that by the time that people get into court. You know, if people choose to go to court rather than going to a mediator first or a collaborative lawyer first, then they are choosing to go the competitive route, at least
yes.
to start out.
Yeah.
And I think that when we started this topic, you were talking about what the Wikipedia definition is of conflict, and that to me is the epitome of what Wikipedia is thinking when it comes to conflict, is that both sides are going to be competing.
Yes, yes. That's the traditional view. It's viewed as competition. It is. Now, competition on the Thomas Kilman Conflict Mode Instrument, he rates it as very high in assertiveness but very low in cooperation. So competition, the competing style has a very, very major drawbacks. Then the final one, compromising. And initially I was thinking, well, what's the difference between compromising and collaborating? But there is a difference. This is the lose-lose scenario where neither party really achieves what they want. It requires a moderate level of assertiveness and cooperation. And it may be appropriate for scenarios where you need a temporary solution or where both sides have equally important goals. The trap here is to fall into compromising as an easy way out when collaborating would produce a better solution. So I think of this, especially in my work with couples, as where nobody gets exactly what they want. Everybody has to give up something, but you each get a piece of what you want. So it's a kind of middle ground, and sometimes compromising feels like a washout, but sometimes it's the best solution.
I would agree with you. Sometimes it's the only solution.
That's right.
I mean, the reality is that there are situations where it just can't be that both of you get what you want, that there is no win-win, that
right.
the best that you can do is good enough. Well, I didn't lose as much as I would have otherwise.
Exactly. Everybody has to give something up.
Right.
But nobody wins, nobody loses. And, you know, I think the important thing about this scale is that knowing your own patterns, if you can improve your self-awareness. And once you're aware of your own patterns, you can pay attention to whether they're working for you and to explore alternatives. And by using what I like about this is by using a scenario-based approach, you can be conscious and choose more effective conflict management styles and test their effectiveness for you and your situation. In other words, not to be automatic about it, to think, all right, is this somebody that I really trust? Is this somebody where the stakes are high, I trust and respect them? Then let's move toward collaboration or, you know, one of the other styles. And, you know, I like thinking of it that way, that you don't just have to go in blind, triggered, reside in your reptilian brain and just hope for the best. You can be deliberate about this if you're conscious about what you tend to do as a default style and whether it serves you.
Well, and I think that some of these are the reptilian brain. It's just a nicer way of putting it. You know, the competing style is often because you're triggered in some sense, and so you're seeing it as a battlefield. You're seeing it as something where the only way for you to get what you need is if you win, so the other person must lose.
Yes, yes.
And similarly, if somebody's avoidant, then, you know, that's the flight response. That's getting away from it.
Yes. Now, you know, as you talk about that, the being triggered, you know, your reptilian brain being triggered, there's another inventory. There's another one calls it the Krabill Adult Personal Conflict Style Inventory. And then I found a variation of it called the Adult Personal Conflict Style Inventory. This was developed by a Mennonite group and SSCN online. And what I liked about that was that it also organized different styles into categories of calm and storm. Okay? So this one that I'm just mentioning gives you two sets of scores for each of the five approaches to conflict. The calm score applies, you know, you apply to your response when disagreement first arises. How do you imagine, you know, how do you manage when things are still calm and conflict arises? Okay, what is your style? And then the storm score applies to your responses if things are not easily resolved and emotions get stronger. And the higher your score is in a given style, the more likely you are to use this style in response to conflict. So what made me think about that, Meredith, was that you're right. As you move into storm, the storm phase, if things aren't easily resolved and emotions are stronger, that's when your reptilian brain, the amygdala, gets triggered often.
Right.
Fight, flight, freeze. And
right.
That's when you'll notice yourself moving into one of these five different modes. And so it's really important to know which one your default is. Now, are you familiar with that one, the Krabill Adult Personal Conflict Style Inventory?
I'm not.
Yeah. It's nice. I took it. By the way, for our listeners, I put it on my website so you can, it's like a 15-minute test, and I don't know how many questions there are. There's a bunch of questions, but it only takes about 15 minutes, and it also assesses where are you in the way of collaborating, competing, compromising, avoiding, or accommodating, but where are you in those five categories in terms of the calm phase or the storm phase? And if you go to SusanLager.com, you'll find it on my resources page. I have a whole page of self-tests that you can take. You can find all kinds of stuff about yourself there, whether you're an alcoholic, you know, all kinds of stuff. I mean, you could come away from that page pretty wigged out or just very informed, but that's entry.
Susan, I just want to know how you did on the test.
Oh, on the test? Well, in the calm phase, I scored very high in collaborating, the highest, and right under that, compromising. So I'm a very highly evolved creature here.
No wonder you do couples therapy.
Yeah, but you know what was also there? Avoiding. I know that about myself. I just won't engage when it feels like the stakes are too high or the person's not receptive. And then my lower scores in the calm phase of things were competing and accommodating, okay, the yielding. In the storm phase, you know, when issues and conflicts have been unresolved and have grown in intensity,
right.
I also scored very high in collaborating. And,
there you go.
But then my next score was accommodating. I yield when my reptilian brain gets triggered, my next response, strongest response, is to accommodate, to just kind of let the other person get their way. My husband probably wouldn't agree with me on that one.
I was thinking, you've been married a long time, so, you know, maybe he's quite grateful for that.
Might be, but I don't think he would see it that way. differently.
He may have answered differently for you.
Yeah, that would be
really...
If he had
taken a test on your behalf pretending to be you, you might have gotten a different score.
That's a great idea. Take this test and take it for yourself and take it for your partner, the adult personal conflict style inventory, and see, compare your results.
I've done that before with my husband, not with this test, but for another test because I was the one at the computer. So it was one of those little fun Facebook test things. And so he answered first and got one answer. And I said, that's not even you. Here, this is what you would really answer. And I went back through and did it again. It didn't come out the same.
Not. I'm sure not. You know, those were my scores on the storm. My next one down was avoiding, then competing, then compromising. So the thing I like about that one is that you get different scores in terms of how you approach conflict when conflict first arises, then the approach that you use when things get heated. And that's the conflict, you know, most of us, what we think of when we think of conflict. Now, Meredith, of course, we've run out of time. One of the things we had wanted to talk about, and hopefully we'll learn this with time, that to not be so ambitious and try to pack so much into one show, is that for people to start to get curious about what you learned from your past, and I think we could do another whole show on that, that what was modeled for us in our families of origin in the way of how conflict was managed really colors our response to it. So, like in my family, I learned that the one who talked loudest and competed the most and was most forceful got the most airtime. So it taught me to be kind of loud. But we learn different things. We learn different things from our family. We also get negative models from our families. And I think suffice it to say to our listeners that it's really important for you to be thinking about what was modeled for you. And what I say to couples is think about your adaptation to the growing up situation and where do those adaptations, where do they not serve you? So you might have to be a pathbreaker as you move forward with this, wouldn't you say?
Right. I would, and it's not simply what was modeled, but it's your response to what was modeled. So, you know, in my childhood growing up, I mean, conflict was safe. So for some people, conflict isn't safe. Conflict can mean that somebody is going to be physically hurt or that they're going to be emotionally hurt, that there are going to be words used or things said that are going to be done to hurt the other person and not just to advocate for one piece or another. And for some people, you know, if you have sort of a stronger personality like you and like I do, Susan, being the first child, I learned to advocate. So my parents advocate and I advocate. But the baby of the family learned to be quiet because there were, you know, all of these other older people around. She was significantly younger than we were, so she had a lot of, you know, parenting and surrogate parenting from older siblings, and it was easier to not advocate for herself.
Yeah.
So it's not just,
and that's often true.
It's your response.
Yeah, that's often true in terms of birth order. But, I mean, there's a good example of how the culture you grew up in really shapes your response to it and your ideas about conflict and how you what you've learned in terms of how you manage yourself. So I would really encourage all listeners to think about that piece. What was modeled? What was your adaptation to it? And does it serve you now? And if not,
that's
to,
the big piece. Does
yeah,
it serve
trust
you now? That is really the key.
Yeah, and then you can learn to manage it differently. You don't have to be automatic and unconscious around this. Now, we're going to have to stop, I want to thank all our listeners, and again to remind you once again that we have a couples retreat, Meredith and I, coming up on June 21st to 25th. So rush to starisland.org. Do not delay. And are we still offering a discount, Meredith, for anybody who signs up before a specific time? What have we decided?
I would say
about?
If someone references that they heard it on this show, absolutely we could offer them a discount.
Okay.
And they should
what would
contact
the
one of us to set that up.
All right. What would the discount be at this point?
What do you want it to be?
$100?
How much?
We're thinking on our feet here. $100? $100
sure.
off? Okay.
Sure.
We've got a deal. $100 off on our couples retreat, and you will not regret it. It is a magical place, and we've got a great program ready for any couples that want to come and develop communication skills, deepen their connection, and also figure out how to manage conflict differently. Now, the next episode, I was in conflict figuring it out because technically it would be June 11th, and I haven't decided. It would be 8:30 on June 11th, but that's right after a mammoth family visit for about 8 days. I don't know when I would have time to even plan or post the show, so it may very well be June 18th. I'm in conflict about it, but I will announce that, so I won't leave you guys hanging up in the air. But, again, it would be at 8:30 p.m., okay? So, Meredith, thank you so much again for joining me. Once again, it's been fun.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed it.
Okay. Take care.
You too.
Bye-bye.